This is a special edition of Macro Voices with hedge fund manager Eric Townsend, the premier financial podcast targeting professional finance, high net worth individuals, family offices, and other sophisticated investors. Now, for this special edition of Macro Voices, here's hedge fund manager Eric Townsend.
Macro Voices All-Stars Episode 62 was recorded on September 23rd, 2019. I'm Eric Townsend. All-Star Professor Steve Keen is back with us today, and this episode of Macro Voices All-Stars is brought to you by TopTradersUnplugged.com, the only podcast dedicated to quant and rules-based investing. And right now, they're offering Macro Voices listeners a free book called The Many Flavors of Trend Following. I'll tell you how to claim it at the end of this episode. Steve, the big news in the last week was a major dislocation in the repo market, with repo rates spiking briefly up to 10%. What the heck is going on here?
It's something I don't follow on a day-by-day basis, Eric, because I'm still into the overall macro stuff rather than the mechanics of the Federal Reserve's attempts to set interest rates. But it's an interesting, it's been taken as sort of a sign idea that the sky is falling by a lot of commentators. You know, it's the end of the death of fiat currencies. I think it was just that the Fed Reserve has been lazy for the last decade because they've gone from a system called a corridor system where they try to control the roof and the floor around the interest rate they set with the tiny amount of reserves in process to when they drowned the market with liquidity in reaction to the financial crisis, which of course was a major event and did take them completely by surprise. And they went from a system of maintaining a corridor around the rate to having masses and masses of excess reserves and simply trying to control the rate the floor effectively. And then what they hadn't realized was slowly but slowly the ceilings have been falling as the roof has been rising for a range of different factors. And they all coincided last week. And we had a bounce up to, you know, a rate of 10% in the overnight rate. But just to put that in context, if you go back to October 2007, the rate then spiked from 5% to 15%. This is, of course, when the Fed was taken totally by surprise by the financial crisis. They had the corridor in place and demand jumped right outside the corridor. So it's by far from the first time this has happened. Looking at the data in terms of huge spikes like that, there have been at least 10 of them in the last decade. So it's not as outrageous and unusual as people think it was.
Okay, Steve. So can you walk us through what actually happened?
Yeah, it takes a bit of background to go back and say what role do reserves actually play in the banking system. And here we're caught up with a combination of both reality, which is what it's 5% of the situation, and myth, which is 95%. And the myth that is still taught in the textbooks, and if you read the Federal Reserve minutes, as I occasionally do, you'll find that some of the chairmen of the Federal Reserve still believe this myth, and that's that banks need reserves to lend. And you would think that the Bank of England would have settled to that back in 2014 when they made their case about loans create deposits. You don't need deposits to lend and reserves play no role. But now it's still stuck in the thinking of the Federal Reserve. So what happened back at the financial crisis was that Bernanke, of course, who was actually predicting that 2008 was going to be a wonderful year, suddenly finds he's in charge of the Federal Reserve when the Great Depression is happening all over again. And he increased the level of reserves by literally an astronomical amount. So if you take a look at the amount of reserves that were in the system up until the financial crisis, you're looking in trivial amounts of money of the order of $10 billion. In the reserve accounts. You fast forward to now, it's $2 trillion. So we've gone from $10 billion to $2 trillion. But what I took my eye off the ball because the actual level of reserves under this policy Bernanke had of flooding the banking system with reserves to enable them to lend, which is, you know, the textbook model that's wrong, but he flooded it from of the order of $10 billion to $3 trillion and actually peaked. And this is what I took my eye off the ball. That peaked back in mid-2014. And the amount of excess reserves has been falling under the usual operations in the marketplace. From there, from $3 trillion to $1.5 trillion. At the same time, the actual amount of money that are needed for reserves have gone from, again, trivial levels of the order of, again, around the financial crisis, of the order of about $1 billion to $140 billion. So the floor of the house has been falling and the ceiling has been rising. And suddenly some of the participants started hitting their heads on the two. And there are basically, it looks like about five factors all came together at once. One is this increase in the reserve requirements. So people think about the reserve requirements being the ratio between the deposits that the banking system has and its reserves on hand. That's risen not just because of that requirement, but also because Basel II and Basel III added additional reasons why banks need to have reserve funds. And the person who's done the best writing on that, if people want to follow this up, is a fairly young student of non-orthodox economics called Nathan Tankus, who did a very nice job of explaining how these extra Basel requirements pushed up the floor. Then there's a leakage in the roof, if you like, and this is where a guy called Zoltan Pozsar, I think it's a fantastic name, Zoltan Pozsar, says that because the Fed's been trying to put up rates in the American economy, believing the economy has recovered, and of course they're now changing their mind on that front, that's both given us the yield curve inversion, but it's also made it an attractive portfolio investment for other central banks to buy into the American repo market with a special fund for foreign repurchase agreements. And when this is done, that actually extinguishes the reserves. So that's part of why we've seen this reserves falling over time. So you've got, you know, in a way, it's the classic joke that one of my maths professors used to use all the time about something being money for old rope. It's a no-brainer for foreign central banks to buy into this market and get the sort of 2% rate that the Fed's offering when the best they can get back at home is with zero or even negative rates. So these two things squeeze together. The final factor is that the Treasury, because of its increase in deficit spending under Trump, decided to build up its receipts, its cash level of the reserve using tax receipts, and that also takes money out of the reserve settlement accounts. Just say quickly, that was George Seglin's point. So George Seglin, again, people are trying to investigate what caused a particular elephant in the living room to turn up. George's contribution was to say that it was the Treasury's own decisions about using the tax quarterly tax receipts to top up its balance at the Federal Reserve. And so that also drained reserves, and all these things came together at once to cause that spike last week.
Okay, Steve. So the crypto crowd would like us to believe that this is it. This is the signal that fiat currencies are meeting their demise, and the world's going to be taken over by Bitcoin. In all seriousness, let's address this seriously. I'm guessing you're going to tell me that the end is not really nigh and that fiat currencies are not about to collapse completely. But is there any truth to this notion that what we're seeing here is a signal that the fiat currency system is failing?
No, I don't really think so. I think what we're seeing is that there's still the talking about elephants in the room. The elephant in the room that is still being ignored by the Federal Reserve is the excess level of private debt that the American financial sector is carrying after the financial crisis. They basically ignore that factor, and they're trying to pump up the economy otherwise. I think that's really the problem that's in train right now. The fiat system can cope with this. And what we've had really is that in response to the financial crisis, they drowned the system with liquidity. And then they found themselves in a different environment where they didn't need to do the corridor control anymore. The corridor control saying that being that, say, they might set a target rate. If we go back to, say, the January 2000 period, they set a target rate of 5%. And they therefore have a corridor of about 5.5 as a maximum, 4.5 below. They regard themselves as having a capacity to vary a vertical supply curve very easily. And they were doing that day in and day out using open market operations. But when they flooded the system with liquidity, that control was no longer necessary. So they've done nothing with that for 10 years. And then suddenly, bang, because they're trying to unwind QE, then they've reduced the margin that they've got. It's still enormous compared to the amount of money they had back in the pre-crisis days. To give you an idea of just how enormous, the reserve balances back in the first half of 2007 were $16 billion. The reserve balances at the moment at $2 trillion. So, but they've come back because of the rising floor, and then there's the leakage for the roof as well. They're coming back to the area where they can still get caught with insufficient funds for overnight settlement purposes. And now I think it's a bit of a wake-up call for the Federal Reserve. They still don't know what they're doing with the monetary system. That's why they're still, you know, starting to talk about trying to pressure the fiscal authorities to spend more and talking about helicopter money yet again, but they've still got an infinite capacity to create money. And that's what they, of course, used to good effect after the spike hit last week.
Steve, I can't thank you enough for another terrific interview. We look forward to getting you back next month for another update. Today's All-Stars episode was made possible by TopTradersOnPlug.com. This podcast, which I highly recommend, is delivered to you by some of the world's leading practitioners and gives you an unprecedented insight into the world of trend following and other rules-based investment strategies, which have delivered outstanding returns for many decades. So if you want a different perspective on how to invest in today's markets without emotions and without predictions, go to toptradersunplug.com/macro, where right now you can claim a free copy of the many flavors of trend following. Check them out. You'll be glad you did. For the Macro Voices Podcast Network, I'm Eric Townsend.
That concludes this edition of Macro Voices. Be sure to tune in each week to hear feature interviews with the brightest minds in finance and macroeconomics. Please register your free account at macrovoices.com. Once registered, you'll receive our free weekly Research Roundup email containing links to supporting documents from our featured guests and the very best free financial content our volunteer research team could find on the internet each week. You'll also gain access to our free research library. And the more registered users we have, the more we'll be able to recruit high-profile feature interview guests for future programs. So please register your free account today at macrovoices.com if you haven't already. You can subscribe to Macro Voices on iTunes to have Macro Voices automatically delivered to your mobile device each week free of charge. Macro Voices is presented for informational and entertainment purposes only. The information presented on Macro Voices should not be construed as investment advice. Always consult a licensed investment professional before making investment decisions. The views and opinions expressed on Macro Voices are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of the show's hosts or sponsors. Macro Voices, its producers, sponsors, and hosts, Eric Townsend, shall not be liable for losses resulting from investment decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on Macro Voices.